You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Just go to Indeed.com/PODKATZ13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on unlimited welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on unlimited welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast on Monday, the 2nd of November, 2020. On the podcast today, Nick Lee, Investment Director at Riverfort Global Opportunities, talks about them declaring a dividend targeting a 7.5% gross yield. Also on the podcast, Craig Martin, Chairman of Dynam Capital, which is a fund manager of Vietnam Holding, and he discusses the fund's focus on high growth companies in Vietnam. Also on the podcast, Alan Green, CEO of Brand Communications, talks about Cadence Minerals, Castillo Copper, and Blue Prism. And at the end of the podcast, I have two lists for you, the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours, and the top five most liked RNSs too. By the way, you can see top 10 versions of both these lists at voxmarkets.co.uk. We'll also see lots of other content right there on the page, and our COVID-19 index, biggest rise today on that index is Gene Drive, and that's up 15.27% to 117. Biggest fall of the day is Tiziana Life Sciences, down 12% to 127.5. Check that out at voxmarkets.co.uk.
Vox Markets is an online community of investors that runs a free mobile and desktop platform that allows you to track news and updates about any UK-listed company, offering RNS push notifications, detailed charts, pricing data, and much more. Find out more at voxmarkets.co.uk/app.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Nick Lee, Investment Director at Riverfort Global Opportunities. RGO is ticker. Nick, thanks for joining me.
Yep, great to be here, Justin, today.
Yeah, and you've announced a dividend declaration targeting a 7.5% gross yield. Before we get into that and the reasons why you're going for that, just for people not familiar, Riverfort Global Opportunities, what does it do? What is the business, Nick?
So we're an investment company, and we are focused on really providing investment funds and funding more generally to, as a general rule, the sort of junior listed company sort of market. And that can be on AIM, could be in the US, could be in Australia, but that's the sort of the core business. And we tend to do it more through debt sort of type structures, but we can do, you know, other structures as well. You know, we're very keen to, you know, preserve our capital and make attractive returns, which is basically what we've been doing to date, really.
Yeah, absolutely. And so you've announced this dividend, and why have you announced it? Is it, because you can back it up with some money?
I mean, when we sort of started this back in, I think, 2018, you know, we're keen to try and create value for shareholders. And, you know, we've obviously grown net asset value over that period. But, you know, we're in a position where we're generating, you know, a good level of income from our investments. And so, you know, we felt that it made sense to provide our shareholders with, you know, greater value through some income as well. And so that's why we've decided that, you know, it makes sense for us to well, we are able to be in a position now where we can pay dividends. And, you know, that's not a common thing on AIM, you know, but we're sitting there, we're generating income, so we're in a position where we can pay a dividend.
Yeah, and it's exactly 7.5% as well. I mean, you know, where do you get that? You can't get that in the bank these days. Banks, no. Almost threats of going negative, some of the banks, aren't they?
Yeah, yeah, and you know, as we said in our announcement, yeah, the likely full year dividend in its entirety is already more than adequately covered just by our earnings for the first half of the year, and trading is, you know, trading has been good in the first half. You know, if you remember, we made net profits of you know, £570,000, and trading has continued to be good into the third quarter. So, you know, we were very comfortable getting to the position where we could pay a dividend, and in cash, not in shares. I mean, we've noticed a few companies out there pay dividends in shares, but ours is proper cash.
Proper cash. And yeah. Essentially, the interim dividend will be Friday. The record date, this is. So if you're on the, if you're a shareholder, yeah, on the register by the 13th, Friday the 13th, that's memorable.
Yeah, it's a good day, isn't it?
November, yeah, your payment date will be around about Friday the 4th of December. So,
yeah.
Time there. Marvel stuff. Okay, Nick, as always then, I think that's got to be one reason, but give us three reasons why someone should hit that follow button on your page and add Riverfort Global Opportunities to their watch list, please.
Okay, so I mean, we think that, you know, we've got a very interesting investment strategy that, as we can see, has developed a good level of income. We're in a position where we're able to grow our net asset value, and we're now in a position where we're paying, you know, a very attractive dividend. So, you know, what's not to like, as it were.
Excellent stuff. Cheers to that, Nick, and hopefully we'll catch up in the not too distant future. Thanks very much.
Great. Okay. Thanks, Justin.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Craig Martin, chairman of Dynam Capital, which is a fund manager for Vietnam Holding Limited. VNH is the ticker there. Craig, thanks for joining me.
A real pleasure. Thank you.
Now, before we get into a bit of detail, just give us an overview. What is Vietnam Holding Limited, please?
So simply put, Vietnam Holding is a closed-end fund, and it's listed on the main board of the London Stock Exchange, set up as a fund to hold a portfolio of equities in Vietnam.
Marvellous stuff. And so let's talk about Vietnam. I mean, some people may not be familiar with Vietnam. How would you describe its country, you know, its economy, its investment destination, you know, as an investment destination?
Well, look, Vietnam is in Southeast Asia, and it's a key part of ASEAN, you know, the Association of Southeast Asian nations, and it's been a member of that club for about 25 years. And in fact, this year it's the chair of that. But as well as being, you know, a core part of Southeast Asia, it's got a very long eastern coastline that faces out towards Northeast Asia. And actually, the people in Vietnam is a very large population, 100 million people. They are Confucian East Asian thinking. So it's got the mix of Southeast Asia that many people may have be aware of and visited different parts of Southeast Asia. But if people haven't visited Vietnam, it's slightly different. It's a very long, narrow country, about 2,000 miles from top to bottom, borders China on the north, and on its west coast, it's got Laos and Cambodia. And then the east, it's got a very long sea, which faces out across to East Asia. Very open economy. It trades a lot, about 200% through its GDP, in imports and exports. And, you know, in the UK, probably 1% of the UK's imports come from Vietnam. Maybe it's seafood, maybe it's furniture. But in other parts of the world, Vietnam's exporting high-tech stuff, phones, computers, tablets, cameras. So it's a modernizing East Asian country in a nutshell. A very dynamic place, very hardworking people, and a very interesting place to be looking to invest.
Yeah, absolutely. You said lots going on there. You know, quite a diverse, you know, economy. So, what are some of the more attractive investments, themes, and sectors there, then, Craig?
Well, Vietnam really only opened up, you know, 30 odd years ago, and since that opening up, it's really attracted a lot of foreign direct investment. So that's, you know, global companies originally looking to take advantage of Vietnam's natural resources and its low labor cost, and that foreign direct investment, or or FDI going into manufacturing has really helped over the last 30 years the economy grow. And economies have been growing about 6 to 7% per annum on average. So as well as that inward investment, Vietnam has really developed a significant export base and exports very widely to many countries, to the EU, to the US, to the UK, but also to China and Northeast Asia. So in that kind of industrialization of manufacturing and manufacturing for export, there are lots of investment opportunities in business-to-business services, in logistics, in cargo handling, in ports. And as the country gets wealthier through that per capita GDP growth, per capita GDP today is probably about $3,000, which doesn't sound much perhaps from the UK or the US, but it's three times what it was less than 20 years ago, and it's probably going to double in the next 5 years. So there's a consumer story as well. And so really from investment opportunities, it's either in business-to-business services to support that manufacturing and industrialization, or it's to really kind of look at that urbanizing population. Less than probably 40% of the people are in the urban centers, which is probably where Europe was in the 1950s. So there's a tremendous amount of urbanization. So that provides opportunities in housing, in real estate developers, in clean water suppliers, in utility companies, including renewable energy. And then you've got the people themselves. They're hardworking. They've got more disposable income. They want to consume stuff. They want to shop at modern trade outlets like convenience stores and supermarkets and that kind of thing. And in normal times, go to the cinema or go out and drink in restaurants and eat in restaurants with their friends. So as a consumer society, there's an industrialization opportunity and there's urbanization. And if you kind of link all those things through with a growing financial services sector, that's really... that's the investment opportunity set that we look for in Vietnam.
Yeah, yeah. Now, there's one theme that links the entire planet pretty much at the moment, and, you know, we can't avoid asking about it. So, I mean, how has Vietnam coped? How's it coping? Because, I mean, at the moment in the UK, like, we're going into a second lockdown, but how has Vietnam coped with coronavirus?
Well, it's remarkable, isn't it, how, you know, different parts of the world have responded differently and have come out of it perhaps differently. Vietnam was one of the very first countries to go into it. So shortly after China, early part of this year, Vietnam saw its first cases and was very quick to act, shut the borders with China, put its police and military instruments to help it kind of look at clustering and controlling people where these clusters were outbreaking. And then in April had a lockdown, but only for a month, and managed to really control the outbreaks pretty successfully. And actually, the country went till the end of July with zero deaths and less than a 1,000 infections. In August, however, there's another kind of set of cases that came up in the central part of the country and the first deaths. But again, a swift lockdown, people doing as they were told, meant that within 30 days, they could release people from lockdown. And actually, in the last almost 100 and probably 150 days, there haven't been any serious outbreaks. And so Vietnam really has kind of controlled it well. And maybe it's, you know, in the past, Vietnam was exposed to other such diseases. We had something called SARS in 2003, where people died in Vietnam. And then probably every couple of years since then, there've been outbreaks of other avian flus. So I think the system is better set up to kind of deal with identification, track and trace. And probably the people themselves are also a little bit more adherent to do what they're told and to be, you know, socially responsible for the good of the community. So we've seen it in other parts of Asia as well, where once you get it under control, if you're able to do so, and obviously, you know, it's a different climate to the UK and Europe, so maybe that contributes as well. But once you're able to really get a handle on it, you can see some economic recovery. And so Vietnam not only has seen relatively low deaths this year, probably less than 50 people have been recorded as dying from COVID in Vietnam, it's managed to open its economy back up, and a bit like China is seeing growth. Actually, probably China and Vietnam are maybe the only two countries in Asia, if not the world, that will have positive GDP growth this year.
Yeah, yeah. Well, do you know what? I'm just looking at the figures now. Now, they're considering, you know, Vietnam's population is 97 million, which is about 50% bigger than the UK's population. On this website I'm looking at, which is Worldometers, 35 deaths, that's all. Part of me thinking, the UK, why can't we look towards these, you know, countries like Vietnam and understand what they're doing right and what we're doing wrong? But that's phenomenal. It's sort of well-managed, unbelievable.
It is. I don't think you can copy and paste from one country to another because
different
there are cultures, differences.
Weather and stuff. Yeah. But it's just, you know, a stark contrast to where we are at the moment. You know, we're in confusion still, and we're hoping this vaccine news will be out soon to help the sentiment or, you know, see a window or a light at the end of the tunnel. Anyway, let's talk about Vietnam and the US. Like Vietnam, big export to the US, contributing to the trade deficit, which I know Trump is always banging on about, and whether he'd be there, come Tuesday or not. Is there a danger there that, you know, if he does get back in, he'll sort of ramp up his outrage and, you know, his hostility towards China and having a deal with the deficits that Vietnam may suffer as well?
Well, it's interesting, isn't it? A couple of, probably 18 months ago, the US and Trump started to kind of tweet against China. And we've come into this kind of pre-Cold War, so to speak, of war of words on trade and tariffs and blocking Huawei and all these kind of issues. Vietnam's actually been a beneficiary of that. So those initial trade tariff tweets and imposition of tariffs meant that manufacturers were looking even more to Vietnam as a place to relocate either some or, in fact, for some manufacturers, all of your manufacturing to Vietnam. You're getting the low labor costs, you're getting the great position within Southeast Asia. And as a consequence of that, Vietnam's exports to many parts of the world have gone up. Mm. And their exports to the US have increased dramatically in the last year, which is great for Vietnam. But it does increase its position on the ranking of contributors, as you say, to the US deficit. So early in the year, there were a couple of tweets that slipped off the fingers of the president that said, oh, in Vietnam, that's probably as bad as the others, isn't it? And then more recently, there were some suggestions that Vietnam was a currency manipulator, which is a common title given to much of Asia by the US. I think they threw that at Singapore and Malaysia and China as well. And all countries kind of refute that. And Vietnam said, no, we're not. We don't use currency as a means to sell more. And in fact, I don't think they are doing that. They're, you know, they've got natural advantages of raw materials and a, you know, large working population and relatively low labor cost. So unlike China, whereas I think it's probably bipartisan support in the US against China. So regardless of what happens next week, I don't think China's going to be a flavor of the month for the US. But the US needs friends. And if you look at Southeast Asia, you look at the location of Vietnam, it's despite the fact that, you know, last century there was a war involving the US and Vietnam. Vietnam is an ally of the US, and the US hasn't got so many allies left in this part of the world. Obviously, the US has military bases in Japan and Korea, and they become quite political at times, partly because the US wants to charge them more for the privilege of having those US bases there. And then the US has a base in the Philippines, and the Philippines president, Mr. Duterte, is quite a character in his own regard as well. And so there's been kind of some threats to the US military bases. Vietnam's actually probably a potential future base. So Vietnam and the US will be good friends. Very interestingly, Mike Pompeo was in Vietnam last week in Hanoi, not only to talk about how they want to make sure that what the Chinese call the South China Sea and the Vietnamese call the East Asian Sea, this kind of disputed water zone, disputed by many countries. The US wants to see that as a stable place. But the US wants to trade to Vietnam. So I think the kind of rhetoric of bashing every country that contributes to the deficit can't continue fully. I think the US needs friends. And Vietnam will probably end up buying more stuff from the US. That might be LNG. The US has kind of a surplus of LNG and of other energy, so it might export that to Vietnam. And that's a win-win. So that $40-odd billion of trade deficit may then reduce because Vietnam's buying cheap, clean energy from the US. So that's win-win. So we don't think there's any immediate risk, although, you know, the Vietnamese authorities are very keen to kind of defend their position and say, no, we're not a currency manipulator. So I think it's a war of words, but it's not so antagonistic as the war of words with China. And actually, Vietnam, as I say, is continuing to benefit. It's called a China plus one strategy, as manufacturers want to do more in Vietnam. Yeah. So I think that's going to help Vietnam for next year as well.
Yeah. And is there a worry that Vietnam may be exposed to one country, one economy too much?
In terms of the fund, well, what we think is actually, you know, Vietnam is a good diversification, perhaps, to investors who are, you know, investing in the EU or investing in the UK or the US. If you do look at Asia as a whole, Vietnam's got some very compelling characteristics. So it is a positive GDP growth story for 2020. We think we'll be back on trend of its 6 to 8% per capita GDP growth in 2021. It is a large country, as we've said, 100 million people. So actually within Southeast Asia, it's a standout. It's a strong performer in terms of its currency, its stock market, and second only to China in terms of GDP growth. So I think having a fund that just looks at Vietnam is not a bad thing, particularly giving opportunities to investors that want to perhaps be a little bit more involved in how they construct their own portfolios and say, well, actually, you know, Vietnam sounds interesting. Well, maybe they've been to Vietnam and they've been blown away by the hardworking people, the fantastic food and the, you know, the dynamism in the country, and say, actually, I'd like a bit of that in my portfolio. So that's what we're about. We're Vietnam only fund, so fully committed and fully invested in Vietnam, and we think over the long term it's going to really reward investors.
Yeah. And the stock market, how's it been performing? What do you think is going to happen in 2021? What's your thoughts?
Well, it's interesting. The stock market in Vietnam's relatively young. It's got less than 20 years, and it's come a long way. When I was first investing in Vietnam, the stock market had probably 40 companies and about $300 million of market capitalization, the value of all the companies on the stock market. Mm-hmm. Today, the market capitalization is about $180 billion, and the daily liquidity is about $300 million. So it's come an awful long way. Mm-hmm. Early part of this year, the stock market got hit, as did many stock markets around the world, but pretty much has recovered and back to where it started the year. Mm-hmm. So we think that this year will end up in an okay position. But we see that actually the market isn't that expensive. So if we look at next year, 2021, we're looking at an earnings per share growth in our portfolio of about 20%, maybe a little bit higher. And the price earnings for that is less than 9x. So we don't think that's so demanding. We think there's good fundamental growth in the economy. And Vietnam's shown that it can combat certainly the initial phases of the pandemic and come through that. So we're pretty confident around the growth for next year. So the whole GDP story is not necessarily fully captured in the stock market. Mm-hmm. And we're only invested in a fairly concentrated part of that, maybe 24, 25 companies. But I say we think that's got a good earnings growth and a relatively attractive price earnings. So we think it's good value for next year.
Yeah. Okay. Every day on the podcast, Craig, I highlight the top 5 most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. To get on that list, people have to hit that follow button on your page. So give us 3 quick reasons why someone should hit that follow button on your page on Vox Markets and add Vietnam Holding to their watch list, please.
Vietnam's a country that's tackled the pandemic with great success. It's one of very few countries in the world that's got GDP growth for this year and strong GDP growth forecast for next year. Equity market can deliver more than 20% earnings per share growth, and it's cheap. It's 9x PE to buy into the Vietnam Holding portfolio. So good opportunity for people that want some great diversification.
Excellent stuff. Craig, good to chat to you. And hopefully we'll catch up in the not-too-distant future. Thank you very much.
Looking forward to it. Thanks ever so much.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Alan Green, CEO of Brand and Communications. You're Al.
Good morning, Justin. Pre-lockdown, yes. Looking forward to another 4 weeks of being locked down. And, well, as someone said to me this morning, only one lockdown left till Christmas now, so...
It's slightly annoying, depends where you stand, but I mean, you know, if we need to bring the wave down to help NHS staff, we got to do it, I suppose. But, you know, I was speaking to a guy right today who's in charge of a Vietnamese investment fund, and they've got 97 million in the population of Vietnam, 35 deaths.
That's all. Yeah.
Because, yeah, I mean, the Far East said, basically, if the government says put your masks on and do stuff, they do stuff, you know, there. And they're very used to it with SARS and MERS and all that stuff, so they're prepared for it. And we are so unprepared. And it's like the message is changing every week on a daily basis with our government, so we don't know where we are. And, you know, and I think we have to. I know one thing, hopefully, and it's happened before. I hope governments around the world don't just, you know, say pledge to put some money towards more investment in future pandemics or in future viruses, and then don't follow up, because that's happened previously. And they've all gone to these conferences, these summits, and said, yes, we're going to stand by this. And apparently, most of the countries haven't followed through with the investment or the funding. So I think now, though, they realise when it's costing, you know, multiple hundred billions, pretty close to trillions of dollars and pounds, then hopefully governments will insure against that in future, you know?
No, I think you're right. I think we have to invest in the future of fighting this. I mean, a precedent has been established in regard to the way governments respond to this. But clearly, the government coffers aren't a bottomless pit. They could carry on printing money and devaluing currency, of course. But at the end of the day, they've got to find a proactive way to go about this. And I still think the approach is sledgehammer to crack a nut. As you rightly pointed out, I think last week only 8% of COVID deaths are from people who are under 50. The rest are people over 50 with pre-existing conditions. So straight away, you can identify if you're in that group and take steps to self-isolate. I think the rest of us, I'm not saying herd immunity at all, but I think if masks are worn, if distancing is observed, and people don't go out on the raz and forget all about it and, you know, have drinks and start hugging each other, then we've got a chance of getting through this. But the lockdown still, to me, I think is a sledgehammer. It's a very blunt weapon to fight this pandemic, but it's been said before.
Yeah, cool. Okay, let's get the stocks. What are you chatting about? What's you got there? What are you looking at now?
Well, Monday so far for me is all about Cadence Minerals. KDNC obviously is the epic code. Shares currently up on the news that, two pieces of news that came out this morning, just trading under 12p, so gives it a value of some 16 million sterling, which in my opinion is a fraction of the actual true underlying value. But nonetheless, I'm not going to go into all the details about the investments. Suffice to say, the Amapa iron ore project in northeastern Brazil is the flagship project, and that's what's about today. I'm just going to quickly summarize the others. They have a 15% stake in European Metals Holdings, which of course owns and operates the Sinovec lithium and tin project on the Czechoslovakia-German border, and of course with the recent joint venture there with CEZ Group, the electricity giant, Eastern European electricity giant. There are plans to develop mine, and I think CEZ have plans to develop a gigafactory in the area. So in Australia, they have a 30% in the Yangibana rare earths project. There are a number of licenses is there, Yangibana North in particular, where Cadence has a 30% joint venture with the operators Hastings Technology Metals, and indeed some very good news has come from there recently. They have a 2% stake in MacArthur Minerals, ASX listed and TSX listed company that owns the Lake Giles iron ore project in Australia, have a takeoff agreement there with Glencore that's worth nearly $4 billion over 10 years. And also, of course, in going to Mexico, the Sonora Lithium Project, they have joint ventures there with Megalith and Mexalith companies on the Sonora Lithium Project area, which, of course, is largely run by Bacanora Minerals. There are several joint ventures with Chinese battery manufacturers there, and Cadence has the involvement in that area. Finally, some lithium projects projects in Australia, which it wholly owns. And then we come to Amapa, which, of course, is what today is all about. So Amapa Iron Ore Project is it's a former Anglo-American iron ore mine based in northeastern Brazil, and it entails the mine itself, all the mining infrastructure and buildings, the railway that runs to a port in Santana, which is its own private port, where there are some $60 million of iron ore tailings. Long story short, Cadence have bought the entity out of administration. They've worked with the local government in the region, and along with their partner Indosino, Cadence are on the verge of realizing the dream of bringing this mine back to life. They've had to go through several hoops. They've had to reinstate the railway concession so they can operate the railway and take the ore to the port. They also have received permission to ship the iron ore from the port, which is underway shortly, and of course the key stepping stone is the resolution with the banking creditors that were involved in the previous administration. The settlement has been reached and agreed. The legal drafting continues, as the company announced this morning, and we expect to hear news on that shortly. In between time, Cadence has revisited the mine and of course the iron ore that's in the ground there, and has issued an updated mineral resource estimate. The mineral resource estimate was last undertaken by Anglo-American, who owned the mine, in 2012, and today's news upgrades that mineral resource by 21% to 176 million tons of iron ore, grading just under 40% in the indicated category. So that's a huge step forward for the company, both in the valuation, of course, the investments made to date. So the final step is for the company to get the drafted agreement signed by all the creditors, at which point Cadence's initial investment goes into the entity DEV, which the company that owns the Amapa iron ore mine, and at that point Cadence and his partner Indosino will own 20% of the entire entity. So in terms of valuation, that is absolutely huge. Anglo-American valued that mine at $600 million on its books in 2012. They have $60 million worth of tailings to ship, and they estimate that once the mine comes into production, it'll be producing EBITDA of $136 million per year. I should also say that the iron ore produced by the mine previously has been used all over the world and is regarded as high quality. So we are literally one step away from what will be a transformational event for the company. And I believe we're going to hear more about this as the week progresses. So it's a big day for the company. I still believe at this current valuation, Cadence is significantly undervalued. I mean, I could go further, but I just think once this goes through, then a lot of companies, investors and institutions will look at this and will come on board.
No, there's definitely lots of value to be unlocked there if it all goes in the right direction, you know. So, potential to fly that if it goes in the right direction. Marvellous. What's next, Al?
Okay, one more mining company, then we have a technology company to look at. I want to talk about Castillo Copper, which we spoke about a few weeks ago. Now, this is a company that's an ASX-listed company, and it dual-listed in London a couple of months ago at the beginning of August, and it raised $1.3 million at 1.7p as it did so. So Castillo Copper has two key ventures, Australia and Zambia, and I'll talk about the Australian developments first of all. It is operating the Mount Oxide prospect, or the Mount Oxide, which is close to the Mount Isa copper belt in Queensland, and there are several prospects there, the Big One prospect and the Aria prospect, which are tier one copper targets. And over the past few weeks, the company has developed the the company Newsflow has developed, and we're now the drilling has basically started, or was started last week, and they're drilling 35 drill holes over 4,500 meters, a reverse circulation drilling at the Big One deposit, and they're drilling two holes using a diamond drilling system over 160 meters, where they're seeking shallow mineralization, and this is a well established area for copper and mineralization of zinc, silver, lead, and iron oxide and other minerals. So the company also announced at the start of the month, that it had acquired two new tenements at the Broken Hill project in New South Wales, Australia. That's owned by Wyloo Metals. These are also highly prospective. And Broken Hill is the world's largest high-grade zinc, silver, and lead deposit, recognized as such. And their footprint in that area is some 800 square kilometers. So we'll have news on that, no doubt, as we go forward. So, drilling underway at Big One deposit. They'll be moving to the Aria prospect, also at Mount Oxide, shortly after that. Today we have news of the Zambia operations. Of course, they have a number of operations in Zambia: Luansha, Makushi, and Lumwana, north and south. And following soil sampling at the Makushi project, they've confirmed 8 target areas with significant copper mineralization. And the mineralization is in line with trending structures, which are host to the Mushiwemba, which is a fantastic name, the Mushiwemba copper mine, which is owned by the Chinese company Xinyang Mining Corporation. So they've got 8 confirmed target areas that they're going to start drilling in early 2021. Very exciting for the group because, of course, we'll have news in the next few weeks on the Big One and the Aria prospect, and hopefully early in 2021, news on the Makushi project in Zambia. So again, real progress from the mining group at this point. Chaired, of course, by Rob Scott, who is former Sandfire Resources, and some 35 years experience in the field. Simon Paul is the MD. He's worked with Sandvik in East Africa, we have Jed Hall, who's a non-exec with experience in banking and derivatives and backing mining companies here in the UK. So a lot of news flow to come. Company's currently got a valuation of $26 million. The shares have moved up slightly since we last spoke about it, currently trading at 2.7p. News to come, and great expectations over the next few months.
Mm-hmm. Copper, eh? Copper's got to do well, isn't it? That's one of the things. It's one of the thematic, strong trends, copper, really. It's got to do well.
Copper is going to be huge over the next 18 months, as in fact are a lot of minerals. But given that China is now getting back to normal and seems to have shaken off most of its COVID issues, of course, its appetite for raw materials is relentless. Insatiable appetite for raw materials will continue, and of course, copper and steel will be key components of those.
I thought you said cucumber then. Will be cucumber.
What was that?
I thought you said cucumber, not key components. Anyway, right. What's the last one?
Okay, the final one. We spoke about this back in May this year. Actually, a company called Blue Prism, PRSM is the epic code. Now, this is a company that has a valuation of some 1.3 billion sterling. Shares are traded as high as nearly £20 on the year, as low as £7.75. Currently trading at £14.77. When we last spoke, they were trading at £11. So good progress since that point, but actually not a great deal of news flow, which is interesting. So the company basically provides robotic process automation, or RPA, and they provide an enterprise grade RPA to numerous companies and organizations throughout the world. These include in the UK Waitrose, Arla Foods, many other retailers that use the remote systems. And of course, in the middle of COVID, robotic process or automation is comes into its own. It's with AI and its cognitive abilities. It's it's something that's easier to keep operating. And indeed, as the company announced on its interims in April 30th, the number of customers has increased in the half year from 1864 customers, 1864 from 1337 customers. Revenues grew by 30% to nearly 69 million. And the company said the company has net cash of 140 million in the bank following a 100 million fundraising, and said it expects to be cash break even in 2021. It's generating 1 million in new monthly recurring revenues. So this is a company that has carved out a niche for itself in the market. It's the leader in its field, and it's also made a series of acquisitions over the past year. Thoughtonomy has now integrated fully, and it's a truly global entity that has market-leading technology. So we're in the run-up now to a trading statement, so we'll get some indication of where the company is on the new year. But the CEO, Jason Kingdon, was extremely bullish about prospects going forward, and also about the limited impact of COVID on the group and its trading. So, again, you know, this is it's a niche operator, but it's been involved at every level of process automation, and also obviously we had the Siebel loans which are being offered by the banks to businesses at the moment. That automated process has been provided to the banks by Blue Prism. So, you know, a company that's very much involved at the heart of day-to-day lives, particularly as we now go into lockdown.
Yeah. Well, they're valued at $1.3 billion.
I know. But if you look at the valuation since we spoke about it in June, that is the rating for the group has climbed and climbed. We've not had any news of contract wins apart from the interim news announcements. So we're due a trading update very shortly. So it may be a case of buy the rumor, sell the news. But nonetheless, this group has continued to deliver, and you know that once they reach cash flow break even. Will a re-rating be due then? I don't know.
At the moment, what, more than 10 times revenue they're valued on, which is quite steep, isn't it? You know,
it's a racy valuation, but they are.
It's a hot sector, niche player. Yeah, so there we are. Maybe they deserve it. I'm thinking, if you look at this, the market cap 1.3 billion, in percentage terms, how much are you going to gain on that? How much are you going to make? What percentage are you going to gain?
Well, that's a very good point. But once they reach cash flow break even next year, if they're on target to do that, I think, you know, so it's looking good. But I think we need a trading statement to see how trading has gone over.
Even
the summer,
if they make cash flow break even, they're like not making any money, they're worth 1.4 billion, close to actually looking at the thing, 1.4 billion, because the revenues it's 10 times on revenue, making a loss. Well, that, I don't know if it's, to me. I don't see massive upside here unless someone buys them. I don't know. I don't see it. It's a bit steep for me. 1.3 billion. 1.4 billion they are closer to.
Well, I guess as we go forward, we're going to become increasingly reliant on artificial intelligence and, you know, cognitive software. You know, that basically processes.
I believe that hype's been baked in. That hype's been baked in. We should have been buying these, Al, at like £2 when they first came to the market. Below that, they came to the market like at 93p and now £14. I think we have missed the run here a little bit.
Possibly.
Why didn't you tell me about these, Al? We've started the podcast in 2016, 2017.
I should have known
about these.
That would have been the time to buy them. No, I think it's just because they're a niche operator, but they do seem to have, they're dominating this sector. And if you think about, you know, where the world seems to be going, where we're all going, automation of retailing, automation of processing, financial processing at any level, these guys are the market leaders. They're the incumbents. So they're really first to market with this. They've grown the company. They've got this tremendous valuation. The one thing is, those in this, I guess if there's any disappointment, there's very little room for any disappointment with a race evaluation like this. So if anything comes unstuck, then I think you could see a precipitous fall. But I like companies that that are in niche sectors and prove they can dominate the sector. So I think it certainly in the run up to the trading statement, I think this is worth a look. And if they've, you know, they may well be trading ahead of expectations. Who knows? Or they may be closer to cash flow break even than they're currently forecasting. So it's certainly one to watch. And yeah, what will happen? I mean. Is there anyone that would want to buy them out, or will they just carry on growing and become the market leader and continue buying out the smaller opposition?
Well, I know the guy there, one of the guys a while back, I did say the guy that one of the founders there has cashed out a big chunk of stock, hasn't he?
Alistair Bathgate?
Yeah, I don't know who it was, a while back, but a year back, I tweeted it saying, God, he's made about, I don't know how much it was, he made a big chunk of change there. Done well. And that's, I should have been in, you know, when it listed, basically. One word answer here. Okay, I'm after just a one word answer. Election. Who's going to win the US election, Biden or Trump?
I think Trump's going to do it. I really.
I said
do.
One word I, answer, I, Al. That's not one word answer, is it?
Trump.
That's all I need. Cool. Yeah. Cool. Marvis, I think he could catch up in the last, last sort of sprint. I think he's going to catching up there. So.
All of the polls, everything. I mean, the thing is with Trump, yeah, you know what you're getting with Trump. You don't know what you're getting with Biden. And is Biden past it? I mean, I think he's, what's he going to be, 82 by the time he ends the five-year term? Is he going to be in any fit state to govern?
Yeah, exactly. Like I said, at the moment, people know Trump's, you're right, they know he's a bit of a maverick, bit of a loudmouth, Twitter-obsessed, crazy. But he does have the business at heart, pretty much. He wants all business to do well. And so, and you need that out of a recovery,
Yeah, you do,
So there we are. And Biden, I think, will be less, favourable towards business. And I think he's looking to clamp down a little bit in certain parts of the business, which you don't need out of And I know it's inequality is massive in America, but so many people lost their jobs in America. You need to stimulate. And Trump doesn't care about debt; he just stimulates like crazy, if he can.
Yeah, he will. And the thing is, as well, we're in the most uncertain times. We're facing really uncertain times at the moment with COVID. Will there be COVID 2, COVID 3? Probably yes. How will the global economy react to that? Everyone's slating Trump for the way he's handling it and everything else, but at least he's handled it a certain way, and you know what you're going to get. With Biden, we just don't know. And I think adding a further unknown onto the existing unknowns will be too much for the US electorate, and I think they will stick with Trump.
Yeah, the thing about polls, you see, right, is that they're never right, because there are a lot of people who will vote for Trump like last time who won't admit to it. So they won't tick the Trump box. They're like independent or something like that. But, there's that to be said, isn't it? Some people will vote for Trump because of the economy, but don't want to back him as a person,
My personal opinion was that I think if Michelle Obama had run for office, I think she'd have steamrolled it. I think she'd have won by a country mile because I think she's a feisty woman and she's got an awful lot to say, and she's sort of come from the Obama school of motoring, which I think most Americans would much prefer. And she'd also there are so many issues in the States, and I think she could heal a lot of those issues, but. She's not there. It's just Trump and Biden, and I mean, it's Hobson's choice, really, isn't it? But there we go.
Exactly. I mean, you can't. Biden gets in, his end of term could be end of term for him. It's like, yes, what comes first?
Yeah, that's right. Or will he make end of term?
End of life, end of term. Marvelous stuff. Thanks for that, fella. We'll speak you next week.
Cheers. Just speaking next week.
Okay, it's time for the top five. Most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They are at 5, Escape Hunt, interesting RNS out on those today. At 4, Turn PLC. Escape Hunt is down, by the way. It's down 2.7 cents, 9 pence. Turn is up 33.33% to 15 pence. At 4, Remote Monitoring Systems, up 39% to 4.45. at 2, Avacta Group. That's up 5.5% to 171. And at 1, Tiziana Life Sciences, down 12% to 127.5. Okay, top 5 most liked RNSs today are as follows. Oilex, audited 2020 annual report. At 4, Cadence Minerals, updated mineral resource estimate, Amapa Iron Ore. At 3, Escapant Holdings in Company, worth checking out. At 2, Dev Clever Holdings, update to subscription agreement. And at 1, notice of interim results from Totally. Most read, by the way, today, let's look at the most read, is, just getting up here, it's Tiziana Life Sciences and initiation of clinical trial for COVID-19 patients. Second most read, Synergen, result of open offer. So check that out. VoxMarkets.co.uk. Thanks for listening. Muchos apreciados.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Just go to Indeed.com/PODKATZ13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on unlimited welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on unlimited welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Just go to Indeed.com/PODKATZ13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.